This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, will the NFL Bigfoot Bryant Gumbel and Reverend Al Sharpton claims gangsterism is a threat to black leadership. These topics and more on our roundtable today. Joining us from our New York Bureau, Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and E.R. Shipp, Professor of Journalism at Hofstra University. And joining us from member station WLRN in Miami, Florida, Laura Washington, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. All right, folks, let's take a look, Michael Myers, at what's going on in terms of whether diplomacy will win out. Iran is sending back their response to the package that was given to them, an incentive package from the West, if you will. But what we are finding is that Iran has no real want to suspend its uranium enrichment program. Many people are concerned whether or not they are building up a true nuclear program. This puts the United Nations and the United States in a very precarious position, even more so because Russia and China have made it fairly clear to the United States that they will not likely enter into tough sanctions against Iran if, in fact, they continue the program.
Well, I don't know why Russia and China adopted the resolution then, because if you're going to pass a UN Security Council resolution, and you assume that the very members who voted for are going to back it up, and particularly if you give Iran a deadline. So I don't know what the heck is going on with Russia and China. My question about Iran is why does they must be concerned in Iran about oil spills, because I don't understand why an oil-rich nation needs nuclear power facilities. It's interesting. Bolton, with respect, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, says about Iran's response, which was a tentative preliminary one because they still haven't really answered the U.S.'s question, the U.N. Security Council's question. He said, in effect, we're not listening. We don't want to read. We don't want to hear your rhetoric. Give us an answer to your question. He is sounding very much like President Bush, who the day before said, we're not leaving. We're not leaving Iraq. And it was a ringing in the ears declaration. Yeah. And they sound drunk with power.
Laura, here's what's interesting from what Michael suggesting that he didn't know why they would need it. There are a lot of countries now, and we did not see this previously, who are saying to the United States, backhandedly, if you will, if you have it, we're going to have it. You no longer will dictate whether or not we can indeed start nuclear proliferation on our side.
Absolutely. We don't any longer have the moral authority on the whole issue of whether we enrich uranium, whether or not we possess certain types of weapons, whether or not we have control over oil. Everybody wants it because we have it, and a lot of folks are doing it. I think that, you know, again, we've lost our moral authority. I think the last several wars that we've gone through in this country, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and now in Lebanon, have shown that we don't really control the decision-making process. We really don't control who participates and who doesn't. Europe has been a reluctant, many countries in Europe have been reluctant partners because they know that we're not the world power that we used to be. And we have to deal with that. We can't be Bigfoots anymore and come in and expect everybody to play games. That's why what Iran is doing is so effective, because they know that they've got a lot of folks that agree with that kind of sentiment.
ER?
Yeah, I think Laura's absolutely right. What Iran did was to come up with a 20-something page counterproposal, if you will, to what the Security Council had presented them with. And I haven't read those pages, but it seems to me that it's a logical way to begin negotiations. That one side puts out something, the other side comes back, and then you find a place somewhere in the middle, perhaps, to find the right compromise. Back to France and China, or Russia and China, they do a lot of business with Iran. So they're probably trying to have it both ways, to try to find some solution to this impasse, but not really totally offend or alienate Iran because of the business that they're doing with them, both in terms of oil and in other commodities.
Michael Myers,
speaking of oil, we could talk all this tough talk we want, but when it comes down to brass tacks, we've got a real oil problem in this country. We've got, you know, gasoline prices that are out of control. If we play too hard of a hardball with Iran, we're going to hurt our own interests in terms of oil prices. So Iran controls and produces a lot of the oil that our nation needs. And so we can play tough, but I don't think we want to be too tough.
And that moves to the question I was going to ask Michael Myers, very broad, admittedly, Michael, but when Laura brings up that and some of the other issues that would certainly come into play, not publicly, but privately, do you think the Bush administration and perhaps America in general understands the instability in this region and what it could mean down the line for its effects on America?
Of course. The answer is it's all about oil. Iraq is about oil. Iran is about oil. Mideast is about oil. It's all about getting the United States, which is dependent on oil, keeping access to that rich wealth of oil. So whether you talk to Iran or Switzerland talks to Iran on our behalf, whether or not we have enough troops to make the situation in Iraq sensible and not have enough troops to fight and attack Iran, all this comes back to the question, what are the United States doing? And I don't think they know what they're doing, but they do know what their interests are, their self-interest, their national interest. Oil, oil, oil.
But President Bush would argue that it's the issue for the whole region is to form democratic societies. And that's why he said the other day in his press conference that that's why the U.S. is going to stay the course in Iraq and try to also maintain stability with the new Lebanese government and with
the
Afghanistan government and all of that. But in the process, I think we're contributing to the instability.
We're not leaving that oil.
All right, he made that very clear. All right, Michael Myers, let's move on and talk about Al Sharpton. Last week, he was in Indianapolis with a group of us. The National Association of Black Journalists held their convention there, and he talked to the collective in terms of black leadership today, and he's suggesting that many potential black leaders are falling under the spell of what he called a, quote, gangster mentality, and that is preventing them from becoming positive impacts not only in politics but within the community. Mm-hmm. Here's a quote from Sharpton in talking about the want for young black leaders to step up. No one broke in my house in Brooklyn and dragged me out of the projects to make me a leader. I wanted to do that clearly. We would work with young people, talking about his National Action Network, who want to do the work. So the suggestion is clean up your act and get out there and actually do something, Laura Washington.
Well, it depends on what your definition of black leaders. I wasn't there and didn't hear Sharpton's entire speech, but there are many young people who are running organizations, who are working in grassroots efforts politically and in nonprofit arena, who are not gangsters, who are not part of that arena. And the gangster folks, they do have influence through music, through videos, through movies, but they aren't my definition of leader. I think that Sharpton, you know, obviously is touching up his credentials as a outspoken spokesperson for African-American issues in particular, because he's planning on running for president again, which I think, you know, is a great thing. I think it's good for Al Sharpton to be out there, be vocal. I don't agree with everything that he takes on, all of his issues, but nobody else in this presidential race on the Democratic or Republican side are going to be saying the kinds of things that he needs to, that he's saying and he needs to say.
Laura, something interesting, too, ER, that he suggested is that the media, as he's speaking to the journalists, should be careful reporting that blacks are moving toward Republican leadership. Now, we know this is a biased man talking from the Democratic side, but he said that blacks are moving toward the Republican leadership position as this year's black GOP candidates, quote, may be yesterday's news come November. Now, is this just a fine Democrat speaking, or is there some credence in what he says?
Well, it's definitely a partisan statement. There are a number of races across the country where there are black Republicans in positions to perhaps win, including Michael Steele in Maryland, I think that is, right?
Yes.
There, but the fact that the media may be reporting that blacks are increasingly becoming Republican or leading towards Republican doesn't necessarily, is not necessarily limited to black candidates who are running for the GOP offices. So I think it's a good thing that blacks may be leaning towards the Republican Party. We need more diversity in this country. Maybe then we can have more influence ultimately with the Democrats and the Republicans.
Interesting that you bring up the name Michael Steele. We see that Russell Simmons has been out stomping for Mr. Steele as well as holding fundraisers. And Jeff Johnson, a friend to this program and a BET host, has actually even joined the campaign. Interesting coming out of Maryland. So many hopes coming on the announcement some months ago that Kwasi Mfume was going to also and is running, I should suggest, for that seat, Michael Meyer. So there in and of itself, as ER suggests, is an interesting study of what is and what is not.
Well, I think Sharpton has it all wrong. I can tell you that the media is in the New York Times, like Times' designated spokesman, and I think I'm paraphrasing what Laura just said, as designated spokesman for blacks. He knows exactly what they expect of him to say now about black youth, including that feeding the stereotype of them as hip-hop, footloose gangsters who, quote-unquote, now could become politicians, which is an interesting theory for the pipeline to the gang in D.C. But Sharpton is playing a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do message here. Sharpton is not, I repeat, not a serious politician. He only runs for offices he cannot possibly win, and he runs to the TV camera, not for elected office. Meantime, the so-called civil rights leaders, including Sharpton, including Jesse Jackson, have become front men for the Democratic Party, and in the person of Sharpton, a tool of the GOP. So whatever happened to the principle of nonpartisanship? These guys, these men, lead allegedly tax-exempt nonpartisan organizations. At least Kwasi Mfume either was put out of the NAACP or left the NAACP on his own to run for public office to identify with the Democratic Party. These guys are running for the Democratic Party as shills. This is outrageous.
Laura?
Well, what do we do about that? What do we do about, you know, people like Ralph Reed and the Heritage Foundation and other Republican conservative organizations, nonprofits that indeed are very extremely political?
Take their tax exemption away.
Absolutely. But, you know, the Justice Department's not going to touch any of these folks.
But until then, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, Laura?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're all intelligent adults here. And Al Sharpton, again, I think Al Sharpton raises some issues that need to be raised. Whether he's shilling for the party when he's doing it, I don't care, because I don't think the party really gives a damn about African-American voters and about
the
gangster, the stankster riders of black youth or anybody else. So if somebody's out there talking it up, that's go for it.
Well, there are youngish black people who are out there speaking on issues that are political. We saw, for example, Kanye West speaking out after the Katrina disaster about how he didn't believe President Bush really cared about African Americans. That led to a lot of discussion about this, what was going on, and it probably influenced the Bush administration with all the flap. It probably influenced them to get a few more resources down there and probably influenced Bush to get himself down
there.
And
there are many of them. I mean, we can rattle them off, Kevin
Ford
Powell, Jeff Johnson, but we can't get away from what Al Sharpton is saying, because there are a disproportionate amount of young black men who have been hypnotized, seduced by this notion of gangsterism, and I don't know that really dealt with it.
And they've been hypnotized by the notion of racial rhetoric, and that's all. They've been hypnotized. But don't paint the race as gangsters.
But you know what? It could be a phase, if you think about
race.
It. This could be a phase. Remember, Kwasi Mfume had a really checkered past, too. And he cleaned up his act to become the legislature that he became. So
right,
it could
Michael
be a
Myers.
Phase that some of these youngish people are going through.
Yeah, let me get quickly to Brian.
I'm going through a phase. I have Kwasi Mfume that is. Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. On his way to the gang in D.C.
All right, let me quickly get to the Bryant Gumbel fiasco, and that's going on with the NFL. Bryant was hired to do a play-by-play for a few games for the NFL. But during his show last week, Real Sports on HBO, as he does every show, I shouldn't say very often, but every show at the end of it, he gives a commentary, usually very stinging commentary. And this time, many people say he bit the hand that is feeding him in talking about the outgoing commissioner, Paul Tagliabue, and his relationship with Gene Upshaw, former NFL player and now head of the Players Union. He told Tagliabue to tell the new commissioner coming in where he held Gene Upshaw's leash. and that this head of the players' union was docile and his personal pet. That being said, Laura, the question now is, and there have been hints that Tagliabue is so mad at Gumbel that the suggestion is that the NFL should now fire him from his job of play-by-play with this new NFL network before he gets started. So is this a sense of you really can't bite the hand that feeds you?
We'll see
on
this one.
I think if you're supposed to be a journalist and a commentator and analysis, you're supposed to report your real views and you're supposed to report accurately and balanced, fair journalism. That would be nice. I think that this is great publicity for Brian Gumbel. I don't think he can lose on this one. And frankly, I don't know that folks really care that much about this issue. These players are making millions of dollars a year. They all have their own personal agents. Whether or not they're getting fairly represented by their representative, I don't think that, you know, folks really believe that these players are, you know, that they're in trouble here. Poor babies.
Though Michael Myers, part of the fight there, we should know for those who aren't sports fans, is that much of the NFL money, and not in the way that baseball and basketball, is fully guaranteed through the whole contract. That was part of Brian's fight. But very quickly for me, with about a little less than a minute for each you and ER. Quickly for me, Mike.
Well, look, I think this is an appropriate point of the show for a musical interlude. What's new? Brian Gumbel tears into you. He did it when he was at NBC. He does it at HBO. He's very outspoken. They've got what they hired. So I don't know what these guys are complaining about. Brian Gumbel, in some ways, is like me. He does bite the hand that feeds you. He speaks it. He tells the truth as he sees it. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. Take your money.
Well, ER, I tell you.
Michael, don't break your arm. Don't break your arm, Michael. Pat yourself on the back.
I tell you, though, very quickly, ER, what's your thought on this?
Brian
Real quick
Gumbel.
For me.
But the owners do have a point. They're paying him, I'm assuming, millions of dollars to be their front man for a new NFL network. So they didn't expect that he would give this harsh critique of how football is going.
Well,
that the games are too long, they're too dull, the Super Bowl doesn't make any sense anymore. So I think
right.
they have
right.
a point, and he may not be on the air.
Well, he may not. Only time will tell. We'll see, because the season is just around the corner. All right, ER, Michael, and Laura, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.